Our learning this morning is sponsored by Bibi and Do Pavel, Kelly Liz and Abby, in memory of Bibi's mother, Miriam Bas Patel, Yehuda Zichrona Lebracha, by Michelle and Michael Schwartz, in memory of Michelle's father, Yisrael Yaakov Ben, Kafal Alevi Zichrona Lebracha, Kafal Alevi Zichrona Lebracha, and by Elaine and Hill Weinberger, in memory of Elaine's mother, Vega Zlata Bas Matisyahu Zichrona Lebracha. It is always a great privilege for me to join the Chevra HaDaf Yomi. This is the second Masechta in a row where I was not able to give Shira on Daf Beis, but that also means the second Masechta in a row where I got pick of the draw, where I got to pick which daf I was going to give on. And in this instance, I chose Ksuba Staf Tes. As we are going to see, this is a remarkably loaded daf. It is a loaded, loaded daf. It's a short daf. If you just look at the Gemara, there aren't so many words in the Gemara itself. But I can tell you right now, I'm likely going to be rushing to get through it because it is just a really dense and very important and heavily packed daf in Maseches Ksuvos. Now, I'll say at the outset that I really could have chosen many dafim in the first parak of Maseches Ksuvos. I hope you know by now, Ksuvos is also referred to as Shas Katan. It is referred to as a Masechta that in itself is kind of a microcosm of the rest of Shas. And frankly, just within the first week of Maseches Ksuvos, you've seen that already. In the first week of Maseches Ksuvos, you've seen sugyas in Nashim and Ishos, Afkeinu Rabbanon LeKiddush Minei. You've seen sugyas in Hilchos Avelos, Machnisin Asameis LeCheder. You've seen sugyas in Hilchos Shabbos, Psik Reishei, and sugyas in Hilchos Yontif of Ochel Nefesh. There's really a lot that's packed into Maseches Ksuvos, as we'll see a little bit today, but certainly as you get through later in the Masechta, a lot of the central halachos of Nezikin, as much as Ksuvos is a Nashim Masechta, many central principles of Dinei Mamonos appear in Maseches Ksuvos as well. It's a very rich and densely packed Masechta. But Daf Tes stands out, even in Maseches Ksuvos, as a particularly rich limud. So what we're going to do this morning is we're going to go through, we're really going to read the Shakla V'Tarya, we're going to read small sections of the Gemara. Like I said, there isn't so much Gemara on Daf Tes. But for each section, we'll try to do a highlights tour of some of the essential principles that emerge in that section of the Gemara and some of the essential concepts that relate to this special daf in Shas. Okay? So we take it from the very bottom of Daf Ches Amud Beis. From what I understand, Rabbi Zatz told me he got to the bottom of Daf Ches Amud Beis yesterday. So we pick up with the words, Amar Rabbi Elazar. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar tells us, now to the top of Daf Ches Amud Aleph, HaOmer Pesach Patsuach Matzasi Ne'eman Le'osar Alav. You have a couple that get married. Rahman al-Atzlan, the husband, the very next day, shows up in Beis Din. He says, I was deceived, I was fooled, she was not a psula, she had some previous relationship, and he says that she, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, as its name implies, I found everything was previously opened, Nam on the Osra Alav, he is believed to make her usher to him. The assumption here is that there was a possibility that during the year between Kiddushin and Nisuin, the Gemara Ksuvos later, in the Masechta, I think it's on Daf Nun Zayin, tells us that in the times of Chazal, there was a full year between Erusin and Nisuin, unlike our reality nowadays, when they're all done at one single ceremony. So there was a year between them. During that year, the woman is an Eishes Ish. She's what's called Eishes Ish Beveis Aviha. She doesn't live with her husband yet, but she is halachically married. So if she had an affair during that year, she would be prohibited to her husband on the basis of the principle of Kashem She'asru Elaba'al Kachasru Elaba'al, or Isra Elaba'al Ulaba'al. And if a woman has zunus with another man, she is prohibited to her husband. That's something that we'll talk about as this daf progresses. So, if he comes in and claims she had a relationship with another man, he is believed such that she is then prohibited to him. Now, the Gemara poses a critical question. Ve'amai, the Gemara asks, second word of the second line. Why is this the case? Svek, svekahu. We have a double suffek here. We have two matters of uncertainty that need to be resolved, two contingencies that need to obtain in order to create a prohibition. Number one, Savik Tachtav, Savik Ein Tachtav. Let's grant the premise that she had a relationship with another man. It could have been before that year of Erusin, or it could have been during that year of Erusin / Kiddushin. If it was during that year, then we have a very serious problem. She was married during that year, and she had an affair, and then she would be prohibited. But if it was before that year, then, we don't condone what she did, it was still a very bad thing, but she wouldn't be prohibited to her husband. So that's one suffix. Then number two, middle of the third line, v'imtim zalomar tachtav, if you want to say that it happened during that year, suffix be'ones, suffix be'ratzon. If, Rachman al-Islam, a woman was raped, if there was a relationship that was not a consensual one, it was coercive, then even if it was during that year of her marriage, That's not going to prohibit her because it was not by choice. So you have two sveikos here. What kind of relationship was it? Was it consensual or a coercive relationship? And number two, when did it happen? Even if it was consensual, it could have been beforehand. So because you need two sveikos, or you need two details, pieces of data to obtain in order to create the issur, this is what we call a svek sveika. And the assumption of the Gemara is that a svek sveika should be permitted, should not be usur. So the Gemara answers, really, it's not a svek sveika. Really, I have two permutations or two scenarios where I can eliminate one of these two sveikos. Says the Gemara, lo tzricha, be'eshes kohen. The Gemara first suggests that perhaps we are dealing with an eshes kohen. Now, what's different about an eshes kohen as opposed to an eshes Yisrael as the wife of a regular Jew? An eshes kohen, even in cases of ones, even in cases where the relationship was not consensual, where it was not a consensual affair, she is prohibited to her husband. Difficult halacha, to be sure, but that is the halacha. Even if it was ones, then she would be prohibited. So there's only one suffix. Was it during that year, or was it not during that year? Secondly, the Gemara suggests an alternative permutation or an alternative scenario. The Iba is Ema. I can give you another scenario, but Eishes Yisrael, it's not a Kohen, it's a regular Jew, the wife of a regular Jew, who could go and dekabil ba'avua kidushin b'chusam ibas gimel shanim v'yom echad. It's a scenario where the kidushin was accepted when she was less than 3 years old. Now, why is that significant? Because the assumption there is that if there was some kind of relationship, if there was some be'ila before she was 3 years old, the assumption of Chazal is that the besulim would grow back, that would not create some kind of permanent damage to her besulim. And therefore, if there were no besulim at the point of marriage, it must be a case where bia occurred, where she was yeser, she was older than gimel shanim v'yom echad, and therefore, once again, you only have one suffix. In this case, it's the second suffix, suffix ones, suffix ratzon. Was it willing or was it against her will? But that's the only suffix that you have. In either scenario, you only have one suffix, and if he comes forward and says, Pesach pasuach matzasi, then that creates a scenario
why
of this.
Why does Torah never bring up the option, the possibility of Pesach pasuach?
Why does what?
Why does the Gemara seem never to bring up the possibility that anatomically she has a Pesach pasuach? Because it happened naturally. It happened without...
Mukasei, so that's a question that Tosos raised on Ahmed Bey's. Maybe we'll touch on it, okay? But it is the assumption is that it's not so common, effectively, is what Tosos say. But if you want, David, if you want to look into this further, take a look at the very last Tosos on...
On Ahmed Bey's?
Yeah. Okay. The very last Tosos here discusses the possibility of Mukasei's.
Okay.
And it might even be discussed earlier, if I remember correctly. But it's definitely discussed there. The Tosos didn't discuss that issue. As you'll notice on this daf, there are very extensive Tosos in... And the Tosfos do raise the possibility of Mukasei. It's also in Tosfos, Dibur HaMaskel V'Iba Azema, on Amud Aleph.
Wouldn't that be interesting when he takes her to court, if he's going to court the next morning, and like David said, this scenario?
Okay, so again, look at the Tosfos, and the Tosfos address that issue. Maybe we'll touch on some of those possibilities, okay? Now, just to zoom out for a moment before we go any further. This Gemara introduces the principle of Svek Sveika. Svek Sveika is an essential principle in Halacha. You have to know the concept of Svek Sveika. There are certain, as much as we have to know all of Torah, we have to know every daf and shas, there are certain things that have a particular importance and centrality. You know, you just learned Yevamos. So if you're not keen on every single scenario of Tzaras Tzara, it's not good. We should know all of Torah, but it's forgivable. It's forgivable. You have to know, you can't be a Talmud Chacham if you don't know at least the basics of Svek Sveika. So let's just talk about some of the broad principles of Svek Sveika. Once again, the general halacha is that if you have two Sveikos, and you need both of them to obtain in order to create Isur, you are licensed in being Mekel, you are licensed in being lenient. Now the question is, one of the central questions of Svek Sveika, is why? And there are at least three different standard approaches that one can offer for this issue. There are three different approaches that one can offer for this issue. Number one, the first is the approach of the Rambam. And this is actually something that I referenced yesterday in our new Chabura on the Shurashim with the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos that we're offering after the 145 Mincha. First is the approach of the Rambam. Let's talk about one suffix for a moment. What's our general rule pertaining to one suffix in Halacha? What's the general rule? Sveika de Oraisa l'chumra, Sveika de Rabbanon l'kula. If you have a suffix, maybe not. So if you have an uncertainty about a de Oraisa matter, you have to be machmir. If you have a suffix about a derabbanon matter, you are licensed in being lenient. Now, is that rule itself mida oraisa or mida rabbanon? So Mark says that rule itself is mida rabbanon. That is the approach of the Rambam. The Rashba disagrees and asserts that that principle is Mida Oraisa. Now, why is the Rambam's ruling that it is that principle itself Mida Rabbanan in this case? Because for the Rambam, that forms the basis of Svek Sveka. Let's take a scenario. We have a Suffolk, and it's about a De Oraisa matter. Okay? So what does the Halacha say? We have to be Machmir. But now we introduce a second Suffolk. Okay? Now, the whole rule that we had to be Machmir in the first place, according to the Rambam, was not Mida Oraisa, but Midrabbana. So now when I introduce a second suffix, it is, ipso facto, a suffix about a dinderabbanon. Which dinderabbanon? Sveka de oraisa l'chumra. That dinderabbanon. So inherently, every sveka becomes a suffix about a dirabbanon rule. And because it is a suffix about a dirabbanon rule, what rule applies? Sveka dirabbanon l'kula. So for the Rambam, the fact that the rule sveka de oraisa l'chumra versus sveka dirabbanon itself is midrabbanon means that every svek sveka is intrinsically a suffix about a derabbanon matter, and therefore we are licensed to be mekel. That is one approach to svek sveka. Another approach is what we would call rove. Whenever you have a svek sveka, okay, by definition, right, we said you need two factors to obtain in order to create isur, right? So that means, if you're putting together a simple Punnett square pertaining to the two factors, in three out of four cases, or three out of four scenarios, it will be mutter. And because in three out of four cases it will be mutter, if you, again, just play the probabilities, this is basic probability, right? If you need two factors to obtain, then in one of four cases it will obtain. So because in 75% of cases there is heter, then there is a rove that it is mutter, and therefore we follow the rove in line with the general principle of Azlinan Basaro. Now, of course,
75% of the cases.
Correct. So David correctly points out that assumes that each suffix is a suffix ashakal. That is 50%, 50%. If you were to ask yourself, are a majority, let's just look at our cases here in the Gemara. Are a majority of be'ilos ba'ones or baratzon? Are a majority of sexual relationships coercive or consensual? I don't know if it's 50-50. Presumably it's not 50-50. I certainly hope it's not 50-50, right? So we're not talking about rove of scenarios, we are talking about rove of halachic possibilities. Now, that's quite a chiddush, right? And ordinarily when we talk about rove, we're talking about rove, exactly, rove in a very pragmatic sense. What is the majority of cases? But here we're talking about rove of halachic possibilities. That's another one that's commonly attributed to the Rashba. The Pnei Yoshua develops that approach, and that's the second approach to Svek Sveka. A third approach to Svek Sveka is what we would call, again, this is a very lumdish terminology, but we would call that there's no leidas hasafek. In other words, we have a principle in halacha called safek. We were just talking about those rules before. Sveka do reis l'chumra, sveka do rabbanon l'kula. And we spoke about whether those rules themselves are do reis or do rabbanon machlokas rishonim. But what if you have something that never really registers as a suffix? Let's say you have something that's just so remote. There are always remote possibilities that arise in life, right? There are always like a crazy possibilities that might arise. But we all recognize that if something is so remote, then we don't really register it as a suffix in the first place. You know, there's always some fluke possibility that again, in one in a billion cases, something strange happened to change the realia around us that we're familiar with. But ordinarily speaking in halacha, we speak about reasonable possibilities. We don't speak about unreasonable possibilities. That's what we would call leidas hasafek. We're only dealing with suffik in halacha if it is something that is accessible to us and that is reasonable. Perhaps we can claim that in svek sveka, now again, not for the same reasons, we're not saying that in a realia sense, in a pragmatic sense, it's so remote, but perhaps when we're dealing with a double suffik, the halacha doesn't treat that as suffik to begin with, and therefore it never registers. Now, there are all sorts of nafkamina, and it's almost impossible to count. There are all sorts of nafkamina pertaining to these central issues. Let me just give you, like again, a couple of famous and celebrated examples. What about a suffik that's efshar levarer? Ordinarily, we have a principle that if you have a suffix, but you can do your due diligence and figure out what the answer to the suffix is, then that doesn't constitute a suffix. It's not a suffix because I'm, you know, covering my eyes and putting on blinders and choosing not to look into it. This, ironically, is also something that we discussed yesterday. I guess the fact that Svek Sveka relates to all the Torah that I've been teaching recently just shows you how ubiquitous Svek Sveka is. Yesterday, I was talking about, in the Shiloh of the Week, we were talking about Arla. What if you have a suffix as to whether something is 3 years old or not 3 years old, but you can consult a botanist, and they'll tell you whether it's 3 years old or not. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on that scenario and whether that registers as a suffix or not. But certainly generally in halacha, if you have the ability to clarify something, you have to clarify it. You can't just say, oh, I'm not going to clarify, I'm not going to find out, I'm going to close my eyes and count it as a suffix. What about in instances of svek sveka? In that instance, do you need to be mevaker? So the Shach has a whole discussion about this. The Shach, in Yerodei Asim and Kuf Yud, has a whole kuntras called Klalei Svek Sveka, Rules of Svek Sveka, again, because this is such an important and central concept. And in Simon Laman Hay, he has a discussion as to whether or not, in cases of Efshar Lavarer, you would need to do so in cases of Svek Sveka. Now, if Svek Sveka is working within the rules of Safek, even if it's a rove, then if it's Efshar Lavarer, you need to be Mevarer. But if we claim that, in line with what we were saying, that there's no leidas hasafek to begin with, right? We're not even operating within the halachic category or rules of safek. Then the whole rule of efshar lavarer, which is itself a rule of safek, may not be relevant to svek sveka. It may be an external principle because svek sveka itself doesn't even throw us into the halachic category of safek because we never consider it a safek to begin with. Another classic application is the principle of safek brachos lahakel. We know that in general, there's a principle that dictates that if you have a suffix about any given matter, I have an item that is, I have china, and I bring it to the mikvah. Do I need to be tovel china? So machlokes aposkim as to whether or not you need to, probably not, but maybe yes, because of the glass glaze. So what do? You put it in the mikvah, but you don't make a bracha, because suffix brachos lahakim. Now what if you have a svek sveka, two svekos, that would lead you to make a bracha? Sviras HaOmer, and I don't remember whether or not I counted last night. Two sveikos. Maybe I did count, maybe I didn't. Even if I didn't count, according to many opinions, I can still make a bracha if I forgot last night. It's only the Bahag's opinion that says I can't continue making a bracha. So now I have a svek sveika. Am I allowed to make a bracha or not? So there are conflicting indications in the Mishnah Berurah on this issue. Halacha l'maisa by Sviras HaOmer, the standard and accepted psak is that you can make a bracha because it's a svek sveika. But there are other indications that would seem to say that you can't make a bracha. You can't make a bracha. Now this also gets into the lumdus of Safek Brachos LaHakel. This Shiloh lies at...
Because Brachos are Durabunin, isn't Safek Brachos
LaHakel? I don't want to get so much into Safek Brachos LaHakel now, but Mark raises an excellent question as to whether Safek Brachos LaHakel is itself just a function of Sveka Durabunin Lekula, similar to what we said in the Rambam by Svek Sveka, or is it a separate operative principle? That's a rich question by Safek Brachos LaHakel. What would you do by a Safek Brachos HaMazon? Right, or but if Savik Brachos LaHakel is an independent principle, then maybe we'd even apply it. So again, conflicting indications in the Beis Yosef. So of course, as many questions in halacha lie at the intersection of two halachic principles, this one lies at the intersection of Svek Sveka and Savik Brachos LaHakel. But part of the question may be Svek Sveka. If I say that a Svek Sveka is no leidas haSafek at all, then again, we're not even within the realm of Safek. Would I apply Savik Brachos LaHakel? Presumably not, because it's not even a suffix. So again, you have so many rules that pertain to this basic question. Again, these are just two examples. There are again thousands of others, not thousands. There are at least dozens of others that pertain to these basic questions pertaining to the nature of svek sveka. Just to note one more, you also have questions as to what constitutes a svek sveka, and here we have two. Conflicting principles that are often in tension with each other. On the one hand, the svekos can't be too close to each other. If they're too close to each other, we're not going to say those are two svekos. We're just going to say they are one single suffix. An example of that is Tosfos on our daf. Tosfos in Dibra Maskil, the Iba is Ema. Consider the question as follows. They say that, if you remember, the question, we have this, Katana Bechusa Mibas Gimel, right? Maybe she's less than 3 years old. So Tosa say, in any instance of a katana, maybe we should have a svek sveka. Maybe it was coercive, maybe it was rape, maybe it was ones. And even if it was a consensual, we have a principle of pitui katana onesu. But because you're dealing with a young woman who doesn't really, it's what we would call in secular law, statutory rape. Because even though it was consensual, because she doesn't really know what she's doing, that's considered ones. So maybe that should be a svek sveka. Ones and pitoi katana onesu. What do Tosos answer? Yishlom l'shem ones chadhu. Once we're dealing with something that's coercive, don't give me different permutations of coercive. Rape, statutory rape, that's all one suffix of ones. If the svekos are too close together, then we're just going to call them one suffix. On the flip side, if they are too far apart, according to some Rishonim, that won't qualify as a Sfek Sveika either. Here we have a famous machlokes between the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam regarding Beitz Asafek Trefa Shenis Arva. You have an egg, okay? You don't know if this egg is from a Trefa or a Kshera, okay? So you have one question about the egg. Now the egg gets mixed in with other eggs. So with each individual egg, I also don't know which egg it is, right? Is that a Sfek Sveika or not? So it would appear to be a good Sfek Sveika. You have two Sveikos. Is this the right egg or is it not? Even if it is the right egg, it's the egg itself could be Kshera or Trefa. So you have actually a machlokes between the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam, and the Ri argues that that's not a Safek because those two Sveikos are so far apart, they're two totally different questions, that they don't register as a Sfek Sveika. So again, this could pertain to this Lumdus as well. If Sfek Sveika is about this new kind of Safek, that means there's no Leidas a Safek, then perhaps there needs to be some relationship between the Sveikos in order for them to kind of register as one Safek that creates this new chalos, if you will, this new halakha category of Sfek Sveika. If it's just about playing out the probabilities, then it shouldn't really make a difference. And even if they're really disparate and distinct, that should still be sufficient. So again, you really have so much here to deal with. I'll mention one other, famous discussion that we'll very reference in brief, is what's called Sfek Sveika HaMishapech. Do you need the Sveikos to be sequentially independent from one another or not? Let me give an example. We have a classic discussion in Halacha of Shtei Shvilim. There are two paths. One goes through a field with Tumah Vatara, with a cemetery in it, and the other is a perfectly good field. Okay? Let's say someone doesn't know what field they went through. And even if they went through the field with a cemetery in it, they don't know if they touched anything that's Tameh. Is that a Sfek Sveika or is it not? Again, intuitively seems like a Sfek Sveika. You don't know which field you went through. And even if you went through the bad field, you don't know if you touched anything Tameh. The Agur argues that that is not a Sfek Sveika. He says, because try reversing those. Maybe you touched something Tameh, maybe you did not. And even if you did, you went through the wrong field. That doesn't make sense. There's no sequential independence in that instance, right? So the Agur effectively argues that in those instances where it only works with one sequence, that is effectively one Sfek. Did you touch something Tameh or did you not, right? You could always construct additional Sfekos when you're dealing with Isurim, right? But it needs to be one Sfek, right? Like, you know, you have a Sfek as to whether or not you ate something Usur or not. Sfek, did I pick it up on the fork or was the other one picked up on the fork? And Sfek, did I put it in my mouth? That's not a double Sfek. That's one Sfek. Did you put it in your mouth or did you not? So you're just adding an extraneous detail that's not really part of the Sfek. That is the argument of the Agur. However, there are many counterexamples, including this one itself, which according to some Rishonim appears to be a Sfek Sveika, and therefore the Pri Chadash rejects this principle of Sfek Sveika HaMishapech. The Shach accepts it in some cases and rejects it in other cases. So again, these are some of the just very core principles of Sfek Sveika that kind of give you a flavor and a taste for the centrality of this principle and some of its operating rules and where it applies. Okay? Dave, you had a question before we go further?
No, you can go further. We'll talk about that.
Okay, good. We've just done four lines. The Gemara. Yeah. Okay, very good. Fine. Now, we pick up on line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Again, that's really just one sugya. We'll see how much I'm able to get through here. I got to obviously finish the daf. But if you go to line 7, fourth word, we have the word tanina. So you told me that if he says Pesach Pasuach, then she is Aser. Now the Gemara says, Tanina, we already learned that in a Braisa, you don't need to tell me that. Ha'omer le'isha kidashtich. A man goes over to a woman. He says, you remember I gave you the ring and we got married? Ha'omeres lo kidashtani. She says, who are you? I've never seen you before in my life. I have no idea what you're talking about. It happens to you. Okay, that's a problem. Himu teres bekrova, v'hu Aser bekrovosah. Says the Gemara, he's saying that he's married to her, so he is now not allowed to marry her sister. He claims that they're married. However, she says that they're not married, so she is allowed to marry his brother because she's claiming they have no relationship. In other words, everybody is stuck and bound by their claims in this case. You claim you're married to her, then her relatives are off limits. She claims that she's not married to him, so she is allowed to marry his relatives. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, why do you need to tell me Pesach Pasuach Matzasi when he claims that she had a prohibited relationship and affair? Why do you need to tell me that she's prohibited? Mahu Desema, what would you have said? Hazam devadai kimlai. There, why is he believed to say that she is prohibited? Because he knows definitively whether or not they got married. Aval hacha, mekam hudulo kimlai. Maybe here he's making a mistake. He's claiming that she has no basulim. And maybe everything was, he's somebody who's lived al Taras HaKodesh, right? He's a yeshiva bacher. He doesn't really know much about these things. He doesn't really know much about what happens in the bedroom in general. So maybe he's just making a mistake. Maybe he doesn't know. The Gemara says, Ka Mash Malan. The Gemara says, comes to teach you that even in Pesach Pasuach, he is believed to make her prohibited. Now this word Kamash Malan can be read in one of two ways. What are the two ways that the word Kamash Malan can be read? It's actually quite essential. Either Kamash Malan, we assume he knows what he's talking about. You're telling me he's a yeshiva bacher, so he doesn't know what he's talking about, but no, he's learned Maseches Ketubos, and from the Torah itself, he knows all about what's going on. So Kamash Malan, he knows what's happening, and therefore he's believed to say that she's not a basula. Option number one. Or option number two, even though he doesn't know what he's talking about, once he said it, he is bound by what he said. Those are two deos in the Shita Mekubetzes. Now, why is that so important? Here we encounter another, again, a core critical Shas principle called Shavya Anafshe Chaticha de Isura. When you claim that something is prohibited to you, you are bound by your claim, and that becomes a binding prohibition for you. Now, what is the nature of Shavya Anafshe Chaticha de Isura? There are two ways we can view that principle of Shavya Anafshe Chaticha de Isura, at least two. One is that we assume that you are believed in your personal affairs. You know what you're talking about when you're talking about your own Dalet Amos, with your own personal affairs, and we assume that you are correct. Alternatively, we don't assume you're correct, but if you say it, you got to stick with it. It's almost like a neder. A person takes a neder, a person takes a shvua. They're not professing any inherent truth to that, but we tell them, if you've taken an oath, then you are obligated to stick with what you're saying. When he says she's not a basula, it's almost tantamount to him saying, he is taking a neder to say that his wife is prohibited to him. And that is the halacha as well. Now, it could relate, give me 1 second, David, it could relate directly to this Kamash Malan. Are we saying he knows what he's talking about and therefore we believe him? Or no, even though he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Since he said it,
he's bound to it. Yeah, David, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, the source is Omer Kedashdeth, where it's on him and not on her.
So right.
It has to be like...
Okay, so that's another major ramification of this whole thing. Ne'emanos la'acherim. If we're really believing you, is there ever a scenario where Shavya Anafshe Chaticha de Isura can have ramifications for others? If we're really working with the ne'emanos approach, at least reductio ad absurdum, if we're taking it to its extreme, then he should be believed on others as well. If it's just a personal commitment, then we could much more easily understand why it's only him and not others.
Now, it seems from this case that it's the second, because right. She's mutter.
That's exactly what your father was just saying. That was exactly the point that your father was just making. So again, even if within the ne'emanos side, you will have to say that it is a confined ne'emanos. And this gets into general principles of ne'emanos that we have in halacha in general. Can we have almost what we would call a palginon ne'emanos, right? When you get the Maseches Sanhedrin, and earlier the Maseches Sanhedrin, you'll get to the principle palginon dibura. Can we believe one part of his claim, but not regarding other ramifications? So even within ne'emanos, you have to claim something like that. Correct. But, yeah.
Making it sound like it's a neder, it can't be, because a neder you can either have hafara or hatara. So in that case, it's not really a neder.
It's not a neder. I'm using that as an analogy. I'm not saying it's a neder. It's an analogy. In other words, just like you can create isurim for yourself through your own verbal commitments and your own words, right? So to here, he's creating his own isur. Let me give you other discussions in the Rishon.
Even though this is not factual, he's making an
assumption. Correct. Even though he doesn't know what he's talking about, according to one read of the Shita Mekubetzes, she's still Asura. I'll double down, Gary. Let's say they found Dan Basulin. That's a case where there is Dan Basulin. They clarified the case, right? The guy clearly mamish didn't know what he was talking about. The experts, the OBGYN was called in. They found Dan Basulin on the sheets. Then would Shavya Nafshe Chaticha de Isura work in that case? Two opinions in the Rashba. You tell me, why would he be believed in that case? They found Dan Basulin. So certainly if it's from an Emano standpoint, it's far more likely that you wouldn't say that she's Asura in that case, right? But if it's about personal commitment, then perhaps she would be. What if there are Edim who testify that he's wrong? In a case, let's say there's Shavya Nafshe Chaticha de Isura, Keneged Edim. Some guy says that there was a prohibited relationship. They say, we spent the entire year with her and we know that there wasn't. Would there be an Isra in that case? Malachus Rishonim, the Tosri Azakin and the Meiri in Kiddushin, the Samachet through Samachlav, right? So if it's about Ne'emanus, then you're going to believe in more than two Edim. Two Edim is the gold standard in terms of halachic ne'emanos. But if it's about his verbal commitment, then it could be that he's factually wrong. We believe the two witnesses in terms of the factual realia. But in terms of him sticking to his halachic obligations, he's obligated to do so. Whatever the case may be, it's unlikely that we're going to accept him over two Edim, right? Very unlikely.
Even though his physically
Again, let's say there were other scenarios, right? In other words, where, again, it doesn't need to be this scenario per se, where you have a shavya anafshe keneged trei edim. It's machlokes rishonim as to whether or not that works. I think it's most likely relevant to this, related to this chakira, yeah.
So
Jonathan.
Why is the shavya anafshe? Because even if he believes, it only creates a suffix. You don't know when she had it.
Even if he's believed, it would only create a suffix. That is an interesting question. And you're saying that that would lead to more of a ne'amanos possibility than, a, right? Because even if you say, if you want to take the tzad of saying that it's more of like a hafla kind of din, right? In quotes. Then, even then, he's only committing to suffix. You'd have to say that even creating a suffix Isra de Oraisa is sufficient.
Or else he really believes that his wife had an affair.
Right, you're saying that for him, he's not saying, right, that would probably, right, that's probably a better answer. In other words, if it's ne'emanus, then the suffix de Oraisa is sufficient to be oser. If it's we're forcing him to stick with his commitments, then he's not committing to a suffix, he's saying that zinsa, right? Yeah, that's probably a better answer. Good. That is, again, some basics, some very, very basics. On Shavya, Anafshe, Chaticha, Isura, we move further in the Gemara. I'm supposed to be finished with Amar Aleph already. Good. We're up to the words, Umi Amar Rabbi Elazar Hachi. Umi Amar Rabbi Elazar Hachi, the word Elazar appears 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 lines down is the first word. Umi Amar Rabbi Elazar Hachi, did Rabbi Elazar really say that if a man says Kidashtich, then he's prohibited to all of her relatives? I'll give you a counterexample where Rabbi Elazar doesn't prohibit, or at least promulgates a general rule that would seem to indicate that there's no prohibition when you just say something like that. Ha'amar Rabbi Elazar, didn't Rabbi Elazar himself say, Eina isha ne'eseres al baila el al iske kinu yastira ukemaisa shahaya? Now, in order to unpack this line, two very basic pieces of background information. Number one, kinoi and stira. Kinoi and stira are the central principles of the halachos of sota. A man says to his wife, don't hang out with that guy. I'm suspicious. Don't hang out with him. That is called kinoi. Then a witness, even one witness, comes along and says, I saw them secluded together. That is called stira. At that point, she is prohibited to her husband. Interesting parenthetical note. Is she prohibited to her husband because of a suffix that she may have slept with a guy? Or no, that is in and of itself sufficient to prohibit her to her husband. Because we're just coming off of Maseches Yevamos, that's a discussion of a famous Rav Chaim in Hilchos Ibn Machalitza. It is Ibn Machalitza, Perek Vav Halacha Yud Gimel on the Rambam, and it relates to the sugya in Yevamos Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara says that if a woman has kinoi ustira, the Rambam's psak is that any of her tsaros don't need chalitza or yibum. And Rav Chaim asks, what do you mean? If it's only a suffix as to whether or not she slept with the guy, then how can you tell me you're going to allow all of the tsaros to remarry without chalitza or yibum? So Rav Chaim uses that as a raya, that when there's kinoi and stira, even though we don't know definitively that she slept with this guy, that is sufficient in and of itself to create a halacha of isur b'toras vadai to her husband. Okay, that's all parenthetical note. That's kinoi and stira. Now what is Maisa Shahaya? Maisa Shahaya refers to the story of David and Bathsheba. David and Bathsheba, story in Sefer Shmuel that we're familiar with. David is attracted to this woman Bathsheba. She's married to Uriah Hachiti. And he's sent out to the front lines in battle, and David ends up sleeping with Bathsheba. Good. So Rabbi Elazar says, we see that a woman is only prohibited through kinoi and stira from that story of David and Bathsheba. Now the Gemara asks two questions that are going to answer each other. Sometimes when you have two questions, they conveniently answer each other. B'tizbara, he says, does this really make sense? Ma'isa shahaya b'kinoi yastira hava? Where was there kinoi and stira in the story of David HaMelech? Did Uriah Hachiti go to Bathsheba and say, don't hang out with David HaMelech? We never found that. Ode, and furthermore, Miasruha. When was Bathsheba ever prohibited to David HaMelech? They end up getting married at the end of the story. So the Gemara says that those two questions answer each other. Halo Kashya. There's no Kashya here. Hachi Ka'amar. This is what it means to say. Ein ha'isha ne'eseres al baila el al iskei kino yustira. The only way to prohibit a woman to her husband is through kino yustira. Mi ma'isa shahaya to lo have a kino yustira. Velo itzera. We see that from the story of David and Bathsheba, because there was no kinoi and stira, and she was not prohibited. In other words, again, the questions answer each other. The reason why she was not prohibited in that case is because there was no kinoi and stira.
It's a prohibited to Uriah, not to David.
Prohibited to David, both. Shem she'asur leba'al, kach asur leboel.
Okay.
Okay, so again, that's another one of the, again, very rich sugis that emerges from this daf. So, Alan, the question is, it starts with an Isur to Uriah, but again, we have a principle of Kishem Sha'asur Labal, Kach Asur Laboel, she's prohibited to both. Another very rich sugya, which maybe we'll touch on a little bit. Mikol Makom Kashya. The Gemara says, all right, fine. I got you from the whole story of Maisa Shaya, but nonetheless, we have a Kashya on Rabbi Elazar. Kinui Ustira in Pesach Pasuach. Whoa, I have till 6:30, right?
Yes.
Good. We're going to finish. Kino Yostira in Pesach Pasuach Lo. What you see from Rabbi Elazar is that she's prohibited through Kinoi and Stira, through this process of warning and seclusion, but not through the claim of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. The Gemara says, no, that's ridiculous. The Gemara presents a reductio ad absurdum rejection here. He says, Velita Meich, according to your logic, you're really taking Rabbi Elazar quite literally. He says, Kino Yostira in Edim Lo. What are you going to tell me? Kino Yostira is a problem, but if there are two witnesses that say we witnessed a Maisa's Nus, that's not going to be a problem? Rather, this is what Rabbi Elazar clearly means to say. A woman is never prohibited through just one witness, but you need two Edim. If there's Kino Yustira, then you only need one witness. In other words, Rabbi Elazar is saying the only instance in which a woman will be prohibited through one witness is if there was previously Kino Yustira. I'm sorry, four lines up from the bottom. Then, in Kinu Yostira, even one witness will suffice. And the claim of Pesach Pasuach is like two Edim. Okay? So that is the rule of Rabbi Elazar, that she is prohibited through two witnesses, or one witness in the event of Kinu Yostira, or through Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Now the Gemara asks, V'chi tema maisa shahaya mipnei ma lo asruha. Now you'll tell me, in that Maisa Shahaya, in the case of David and Bathsheba, why wasn't she prohibited? There's a machlokas Rashi tells us as to how exactly to interpret this question. Rashi says, Rabbi Elazar just gave us three ways that a woman could be prohibited. Two witnesses, Kinoi and Stira, or Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. We know there was no Kinoi and Stira in the case of David and Bathsheba, but what was there? So Rashi says there were two witnesses. Why? Because everybody knew about it. Rashi says this wasn't a private affair. This was the king, and everybody knew about it, and that's sufficient to render it Shnei Edim. Sharei Edim Harbe Yadu is the last Rashi on the daf. Tosos say no. Even though people knew about it, nobody actually saw what happened. Nobody was there to see it. So Tosos claim that it's not about Shnei Edim. It's about the fact that David HaMelech himself knew what happened, and that is tantamount to Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. That's the claim of Tosos. So Zarash throw out another principle. What general principle do we have of Eidos when it comes to these private matters? It's a principle in the Gemara Kiddushin. We have it at every single wedding, or every single Ashkenazi wedding. In the Yichud room, right, we have two witnesses who don't go into the Yichud room. That would defeat the purpose of Yichud. That would defeat the concept of Yichud. They stand outside. And we have a principle of just seeing them go into seclusion is tantamount to witnessing the Bia itself. But in any event, whichever avenue you take, Bathsheba should have been usher to David. The Gemara offers two possible answers. One, hasam ones hava. Perhaps it was against the full will of Bathsheba. A striking answer. Bipa is ema. Perhaps the more famous answer, alternatively we'll say, more famous from Gemara and Shabbos, not so much from Gemara and Kesubis, but he had the amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani of Rabbi Yonasan. Another answer is that which Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani reported in the name of Rabbi Yonasan. Kol hayotze lemolchemes beis David get krisus kosev leishto. Whenever one would go out to war in David HaMelech's army, they would write a get to their wives. Why would they do so? Because there was always a concern that perhaps they'd be a prisoner of war, that they wouldn't come back, and they wouldn't be able to verify their death. If they would come back, good, they live on happily ever after. If they verify their death, then the woman could get remarried. If they're taken as a prisoner of war, the woman is naguna, in the traditional sense. She's stuck. She can't get married because her husband may be alive. So they would write a get beforehand to their wives. Tichsiv, v'yesachecha tifkod l'shalom be'ezeruva samtikach. Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, this is the context of David HaMelech, before he was on the front lines, his father Yishai was sending him to bring provisions to his brothers. So he says, bring provisions to your brothers, ves aruva sam tikach, take their aruva sam. What does that mean? Mai ves aruva sam tikach, the Gemara asks, what does it mean, take their aruvos? Tanri of Yosef, dvarim ha-me'uravin beino leveina. It refers to the things that connected me'uravin, him to them to their wives. In other words, Yishai was telling David HaMelech, go to your brothers on the front lines and retrieve a get from them to divorce their wives. Now, interestingly, I think traditionally we learned this the way Rashi did. What does Rashi say? It wasn't a get, but it was a get al-tanai. What is a get al-tanai? It was with a condition. If I don't come back from war, I hereby declare this to be a get. Tosas interestingly reject that on several grounds. They don't really like what Rashi says for several reasons. If that was the case, then how could David HaMelech have a relationship with Bathsheba? Maybe Uriah Achiti would come back. So there seems to be other evidence from that from other Gemaras that Safik Ish, of course, from Malbekin Penechavir Barabim. Tosfos conclude that it was an actual get, that they would actually divorce their wives, and if they would come back, so the Kohanim would be a problem. What would Pinchas ben Elazar ben HaKohen do? I think most Kohanim were probably not going out to war. So that was probably not such a prevalent problem. But what about the Mashuach Muhammad? What about Pinchas ben Elazar? So they presumably would not be able to do that. But Tosfos maintained that that was the general practice, was that they would actually write a get krisos le'ishtam right away.
With regards to this this get out tonight, if it had been an actual get, and David had relations with Bathsheba, the kind of preference this whole discussion about the idea that in order for that to have an issue here, you would have that situation where she would have been ushered to her husband afterwards. She could never have gone back to Uriah afterwards. It would only have been the idea that you cannot go back to...
That's a separate Israel, Machzer Grushaso. If David HaMelech had married Bathsheba in the interim...
It would have to have required marriage, not just...
I believe so.
Okay.
I confess I'm not keen on the details right now of Machzer Grushaso, but I believe it requires Nisuin in between. That is what I would say. Okay, let's go. Any further questions? Let's go weiter. We are now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. Third word. Amar Abaye, says Abaye, Abana Nami Tanina. Really, this whole idea that she is prohibited to him, we can learn from a Braisa. Basula Nises Liyom Haravi'i, or really our Mishnah. Basula Nises Liyom Haravi'i, a Basula gets married on Wednesday. Liyom Ravi'i in Liyom Chamishi Lo. What is there? Some halacha lomash misina that you can only get married on Wednesdays. She can't get married on Thursdays. The Gemara says, Lo, no, that's not really what it means. My taima, why is it that we only get married on Wednesday? We saw this earlier in the Masechta. Mishum ikrure daita, because the Beis Din would convene on Thursday, and we don't want him to just, you know, cool off and decide he's not going to bring his claim forward because they got married on Monday, and by the time Thursday comes around, he says, you know what, it's fine, it's no big deal. So he says, Ulamai, why are we so concerned that he's going to cool off and he's not going to bring his claims to Beis Din? Ila mesav laksuba, if the whole concern is whether or not he needs to pay her a ksuba, because of course if she had an affair, he doesn't need to pay her a ksuba. The Gemara says, nesavla, then what do we care? If he cools off and he decides he wants to pay her ksuba, who are we to intervene in their affairs? That's totally his decision. He could decide he wants to pay her ksuba. Ela leosra alav, what's our concern? That perhaps they're prohibited to each other, and if he just cools off, then we're never going to learn about that prohibition, and they're going to spend the rest of their lives in sin. That is our concern. As much as we're not concerned about his personal financial affairs, his personal spiritual affairs, we are concerned about. Give me 1 second, Alan. So clearly we are concerned about the Esor. So clearly when he comes forward and says, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, that would be sufficient to make her Asur. Then the Gemara answers, Udekata'in Taina Mai. Really, what exactly is he claiming here? Lab dikatan tainas pesa pasuach? Is it not a case where he's coming to Basin to say pesa pasuach, and hence we see that it is sufficient to create an iser? The Gemara answers, lo. No, he's not really claiming pesa pasuach. Dikatanin tainas damim. He's making a claim about the damim, not that he feels that there was no obstruction, that there was no hymenal membrane there, and therefore she's not a basula. He's making a claim that I didn't see any dam, that there was no blood. That claim, which is a stronger claim, because it's more empirical, it's more visible, for that, the Gemara says, we would make her usher. But you can't bring a proof from the Mishnah that Pesach Pasuach would be a sufficient claim to create Yisur.
That's how we were learning for a week and a half.
Sorry?
That's how we were learning for a week and a half. What did Abaye all of a sudden come up and say, oh, it has to do with Pesach Pasuach?
So,
we never thought about Pesach Pasuach until we came to today's
Daf. In other words, as opposed to Tainas Damim?
Yeah.
Right, so right now, and now we're bringing up Pesach Pasuach, and Abaye is effectively making your point exactly, Manny. In other words, he's saying, don't assume that it's Pesach Pasuach, it could have just been Tanas Damim. Right?
When you made the comment, the Usra, she's not really Usra to him.
Why not? That's the whole discussion. Nam on the Usra love.
If you want to say to me that because he has a taina against her, he could have a taina against her, we say that she's Usra to him, I can almost accept that. The fact that a woman is not a psula does not make her usher to a guy necessarily.
That's literally the whole discussion that we're going through. You're 100% correct. That was literally the whole discourse.
But the whole issue, if Rabbanan don't care money. Once you give the Mizula. Okay, so the girl's not a Mizula. Unless you've got unless there's a real. If you're okay with the fact that she's not a Mizula.
Again, but Alan, again, that was the whole discourse of Testament Aleph. If she had a relationship during that year of Eris and Venisuin, then she is prohibited to him.
In that particular case.
Right, so you're dealing with a Sveik to Orisa. You're dealing with a Sveik. Again, that was literally the whole discussion of Testament Aleph. Therefore, it's a Sveik to Orisa, and therefore she's prohibited, right? As we've been discussing. Okay? Now, again, because I'm ahead of schedule, because I have 15 minutes left for the last few lines of this daf, I'll tell you that another very rich sugya on this daf is this whole notion of Kshem Shasur LeBaal, Kach Asur LeBoel. The whole notion that she'd be prohibited to David HaMelech because she's prohibited to Uriah Chiti, Alan, as you were referencing before, is a very, Alan Shopman, is a really rich sugya. And one of the there are a number of rich conceptual questions in that sugya, but I'll just address one. Is the prohibition to this boel, to this adulterer, because of the avera per se, or is perhaps the cause something different? Let's take the following scenario. You have a woman who is a katana, let's say. There could be kiddushin for a katana, right? And you have a katana shezinsa. Is she prohibited to the Baal and Boel? Or is she not? Is there a prohibition in that case? It's a machlok between the Rambam and the Raavad, and Isurei Bia Perakim Halacha Beis, and other places too. Now, intuitively, what would you have said? Is she prohibited or not? I intuitively would have said she's not. Because she's a katana. Right? So there's no real Isur here, or maybe there's a, again, if we want to get really lumdish, maybe there's a Maisa Avera, but there's certainly no Chiyuv, there's certainly no Onesh, right? So we just got finished saying Pitoi Katana Onesu in the spirit of Tosfos, right? So would we say that she's prohibited in that circumstance? Yet the Rambam...
She may not be prohibited to them, but they would still be easily prohibited to her.
Okay, interesting. But would she be prohibited to her husband? Would there be a prohibition for her in those cases? So the Rambam maintains that there would be a prohibition there. Because one of the central questions in this sugya is, again, is it about the Avera or what we would call the Begidas HaBaal? Is it the fact that she's just done something wrong interpersonally to her husband, even if she didn't realize that it had the severity of Gilui Arayos as far as Hashem is concerned? There's a really remarkable tshuva of the Ma'arik in Siman Kuf Samach Zayin. He discusses the following case. Let's say a woman has an affair, and she says, it was an Isur Shogig. Nobody ever taught me that it's Usur. I never learned Vayikra Perek Yuches. I never learned the halacha of Eishes Ish. Nobody taught me that. Nobody told me that it's Usur. It's true of the Ma'arik. So,
if you watch TV now.
So she goes, okay, fine. So, in the Ma'arik, there was times the Ma'arik, there was no TV, but Eina Chinami, okay, right? She's a product of contemporary values. And she claims it was an Isur Shogig. Should there be an Isur or should there not? The Ma'arik argues this is not contingent on Mezid or Shogig. It's not contingent on whether you knew that there was an Avera Klape Shmaya, whether you knew there was an Avera Tashem or not. It's a betrayal of the marriage. It's a betrayal of the sacred character of the marriage. It's a betrayal of the Baal. It's Begidas HaBaal. Therefore, it would be prohibited. There was, a remarkable tshuva in more contemporary times. I forget whose tshuva it is. Is it a tshuva of the Nodeb Yehuda? This was a horrible case where there was a woman. There was this very holy visitor. Right? And you have to understand the times. So the 17 is it Nodeb Yehuda? I don't remember where this tshuva appears. This holy visitor was somebody who wore white robes and he fasted all the time and he was constantly saying to Tehillim. Again, you have these like itinerant holy personalities that existed in those times. And this woman took him in. You know, she thought she was doing a mitzvah.
The mother-in-law case?
And she he convinces her that I'm Eliyahu HaNavi, and I had a nevuah that you are going to be the mother of Mashiach. And he sleeps with this woman, and he disappears. And he had claimed to her that there was going to be some sign from the Shamayim that you're going to see, that it's going to come true, and that's how you're going to know that you're the mother of the Melech HaMashiach. And the sign never came true. And then she went to the poskim and had to consider whether she was prohibited to her husband. Here, you almost had the opposite case of Shogeg. In other words, it was certainly an Avera of Eishes Ish, right? But she didn't necessarily intend it as a Begidas HaBaal, maybe. In other words, you have the same tension as to how exactly to assess scenarios like this in terms of how it was. Or I'm sorry, maybe the lumbus was the opposite. It was still a Begidas HaBaal, even though she was doing it as a real Shogeg. In other words, she still violated the sacred character of the marriage, even though it was an Isur Shogeg. I don't even remember what the Psak was in that case, but again, it just shows you some of the crazy standards that you have in these cases. What about a case where a woman has an affair with a Nachri? Nevelas l'nachri. It's a discussion of Tosos earlier in the Masechta on Ksub Staf Gimel Mit Beis. In many instances, we consider Be'ila l'nachri not to be a full Be'ila halachically. in many instances. It's not a full be'ilah. But in this instance, is it a full be'ilah? Certainly, if it's about betrayal of the marriage, right? Then we wouldn't say that because halachically speaking, be'ilah l'nachri is not a full ma'isa be'ilah, then somehow it's okay in this case, and it's not. It's, she's not going to be asur l'baal. So again, that's another case where you see just a nafkamina. You see this whole question of how exactly we assess these kinds of cases, and whether it's a function of the isur, the aveira, narrowly speaking, or it's a function of the betrayal of the marriage, the sacred character of the marriage, the commitment to the husband, and the like. Okay, and again, that's only one question within the sugya. There are many more interesting questions in the sugya, but further we go. Unless there are any questions. Okay, let's finish up the final section of the Gemara. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda reported in the name of Shmuel, Ha'omer Pesach Pasuach Matzasi Ne'eman Lehafsida Ksubasa. Maybe in the case of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, he is believed to cause her to lose her ksuba. So before we were talking about Ne'eman L'Osra Alav, is he believed to create a prohibition? Here we're talking about Ne'eman Lehafsida Ksubasa. He's believed to take away her ksuba. Amar of Yosef, Rav Yosef says, Mai Kamashmalan, what are you trying to teach me? Tanina, we actually learned this already, that he's believed to remove her ksuba. Why? Because, six lines up from the bottom, first word, we learned, Ha'ochel Eitzel Chamev B'Yehuda Shelo Be'edim. If somebody was in the realm of Yehuda, and he had a secluded meal with his in-laws, without witnesses, before the marriage, Eino Yachol Liton Tanas Besulim, then he can no longer claim Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, M'neshe Misyachid Ima. Because he had Yichud with this woman. Apparently the minhag in Yehuda was that there would frequently be yichud between husband and wife before the actual nisuin. So in that case, he can't say Pesach Pasuach Matzasi because she had a relationship with somebody else. We assume shkoyach, but our assumption is going to be that you actually are the product of this Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, that it was your relationship with her that caused this Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, not a relationship with somebody else. The Gemara continues, B'Yehudahu delo matzitain. In Yehuda, he cannot make this claim of ta'anas pesulim. Habegalil matzitain. But in Galil, when they didn't have this minhag to have yichud between husband and wife before the marriage, then he can claim Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Ulamai. Once again, what halacha are we considering here? Ila Osra Alav, if the concern here is that perhaps she is prohibited to him, Yehuda Amai Lo. And when Yehuda, why would we say that he can't make that claim? If the concern is Isser, then as much as it's likely that they had a relationship, that it was a relationship between him himself and his wife beforehand, if it's a matter of Isur, if it's a matter of prohibition, then maybe he should still be able to create that prohibition. Certainly, if Shavya Nafshe Chaticha the Isura is kind of like a personal commitment, as we were discussing before, he should be able to take that upon himself. Do we not see that the concern here is the claim of making her lose her ksuba? And what exactly is he claiming? Don't we say he's claiming Pesach Pasuach, and he is believed, at least in Galil, to make her lose her ksuba? The Gemara answers, no. Lo, his claim is that he didn't see blood. Once again, we say that it's not dealing with Pesach Pasuach, it's dealing with Ta'anas Damim, and that is why he would be believed to make her lose her ksuba. Now, just very quickly, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi is saying, based on your physical sensation during Tash B'Shamita, there was no barrier, there was no blockage. It was Pesach Pasuach, like the language implies, right?
Right.
Whereas Tanas Damim is about the visual of blood.
Doesn't one lead to the other?
They certainly relate, but
more than relate.
But as we said before, one can claim Pesach Pasuach Matzasi even in an instance where there was Dam Basulim. That was the case that we were discussing in the Rashba. It's not a particularly strong claim, right? But one theoretically, they're not, from a physiological standpoint, in theory, they're distinct. They're distinct, even as they are related. Now, just again, to bring everything full circle, within this Lehafsida Ksubasa, some of our old questions circle back. Tosos, in his final Tosos over here, suggests that perhaps there should be a Svek Sveka for her to gain her Ksuba, right? And he brings up the concern that David was mentioning before. Maybe she's a Mukas Eitz. And maybe, even if not, maybe it was Ones, maybe there should be a Svek Sveka. And Tosos really argued that, you know what, it's not really a good Svek Sveka, the Svek of Mukas Eitz isn't good. But the assumption of Tosos is that a Svek Sveka is good enough, lehotzi mamon. If I have a Svek Sveka, I can extract money from somebody else on the basis of that Svek Sveka. That's not a universally agreed upon principle. Others dispute that Svek Sveika can be used to hotzi, to be motzi mamon. So once again, this gets back into the principles of why Svek Sveika is operative, right? If Svek Sveika is just like the Rambam said, because it's Sveika Darabanan Lekula, that wouldn't really help you to extract money from somebody else in a Beis Din. But if Svek Sveika is based on Rove, then perhaps it could work and things like that. And then, can you be motzi mamon?
If you have a
chazaka, you mean?
Yeah, you already have
a sword
because you have the
so. So that's exactly the discussion in Tosfos. In other words, can a Svek Sveika be used against Cheskas Mamon? That's exactly the question. In other words, we have a principle of Uki Mamon B'Cheskas Mare, that or Chazaka Kol Mash Tachat Yad Adam Harei Ushalau. Those might be two separate principles. But we have a general assumption that, or Hamosi Mechaver Olav Araya. Those might be three separate principles. But we have a general assumption that what's yours is yours, and you can't take it away. The question is, what if a Svek Sveika comes against that Chazaka? And Tosfos are assuming that it would be sufficient to overrule that chazaka. And then really, just again, one final point, just to show you how, again, these universal Shas principles really come into play. Tosfos also suggests that perhaps she should be able to offer a migo. In other words, she comes along and says that she wants to claim her ksuba. He says, pesa pasua. Why can't she be believed that she was a basula, migo, that she could have claimed mukas eitz? I could have said I'm a mukas eitz, and that's why I didn't have basulim, and then I would get my ksuba. So migo that I could have claimed mukas eitz, let me claim Pesach Pasuach. Tosfos raised two possibilities as to why that might not work. Number one, you have a Migo, she has a Migo, he has a Chazaka, as Manny just mentioned. Which wins in the case of Migo versus Chazaka? So usually, the Gemara Baba Basra tells us that Migo would win in cases of Chazaka. But Tosfos here, in just four words, offer this critical possibility. Shema Chazaka Dehacha Adifa. Maybe not all Chazakos are created equal, maybe this Chazaka is stronger than other Chazakos. Critical principle in Echos Migo. And the second suggestion is, this is, again, above Metzia principle from above Metzia Daf Beis, maybe Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrinon. Maybe you can't use a Migo to extract money from somebody else. So again, it's literally just the last line in Tosfos here, but once again, opening up very broad principles in Shas, just demonstrative of Ksubas as a whole, where really just, like, as we saw today, a very short Daf in Gemara can really open up some of the most central principles in all of Shas. So, Shkayach on Daf Tes, tomorrow you do Daf Yud with Ksuba Doreis, Ksuba Darabanan, another favorite topic of my Rebbe Rosenzweig, and continue to enjoy the Sefes Ksuvas.